or that I could trust him. I studied the note once more. Meet me at the museum. I know the building he means, but the old museum, which stands right in the center of town, is such an odd meeting place. And it is well past curfew. I can't possibly go there. I had promised Astrid, too, that I would not see Luke again. I turn back now, searching for her, but she has disappeared into the gathering. Astrid will be with Peter tonight. Surely she will not notice if I am gone. Still, the smart thing to do would be to stay at the wedding party until it is over, and then go back to Theo. But we will be leaving soon, and I might never see Luke again. I look in the direction of the train, needing to go check on Theo before I go anywhere. Inside the sleeper carriage, Theo lies awake on the berth, as if waiting for me. I pick him up and hold him to me, inhaling his warm, sleepy smell. I've been constantly worried since he became ill, as if reminded how very fragile he is, how he might be lost in an instant. Elsie stands from the adjacent berth, where she had been knitting.
"Oh, good! You're back," she says. "Still time for me to join a bit of the party before it ends." "I'm not back. That is..."
I search for an explanation why I need her to watch Theo longer. But before I can finish, she skips from the train. I think about calling after her, then decide against it. "Just you and me," I say to Theo, who gurgles his approval. I look from Theo to the door of the train and back again, wondering what to do. Do I dare bring him with me? I step out into the chilled night air, then stop. It is irresponsible to take Theo out like this, but if I want to see Luke, there's no other choice. I wrap him inside my coat. I start away from the train, ducking low and clinging to the edge of the circus ground so as not to be seen as I hurry for the cover of the trees. Once sheltered by the forest, I start in the direction of the village, finding my way slowly through the woods so as not to trip on one of the many tree roots and rocks that jut out from the hard, uneven earth. The path is the same one that Astrid had shown me the first day I had gone into Tears, but it is eerie now, dark shadows seeming to loom between the trees. This time it is just Theo and me, alone in the woods as we had been the night we were found by the circus. I shiver, the fear and despair of that moment falling over me once more. Dried branches crackle beneath my feet, seeming to give us away. My skin prickles, as though someone might leap out of the bushes at any moment. I reach the edge of the forest and start for the footbridge. Then I stop, looking down at Theo, who gazes back at me with trusting eyes, counting on me to do what is best for him. "This is so selfish of me," I think, my guilt rising. "How can I risk his safety for this?" As I near town, the streets are deserted after curfew. Lights are blackened out. I tuck Theo further beneath my coat. He squirms on my hip, no longer the newborn content to lie in my arms. I pray he will not cry out. I do not take the main thoroughfare as I had when I came to town the day I met Luke. Instead, I follow the side streets that run parallel to it, clinging to the shadows of the crumbling stone wall that runs along a climbing path. The museum sits on the northern edge of the town center. It is a small castle that was converted to show the town's history, now shuttered for good. The road leading to the gate is exposed, bathed in moonlight. I stop uncertainly, my skin prickling. Meeting in the middle of town like this is foolish, I think, seeing Astrid glaring at me with disapproval in my mind. A heavy chain is wrapped around the gate of the museum, locking it. I step back angrily. Is this some kind of joke? "Noah," Luke calls through the darkness, signaling me around the side of the museum to a door. Inside,
The cavernous main gallery is damp and musty. In the moonlight, I can see that the once grand hall has been pillaged. A torn painting hangs off the wall, and pieces of armor lie broken on the ground. Behind shattered glass displays, exhibits are empty, their valuables taken by the Germans or looters. Something, a bird or bat perhaps, flutters in the darkness beneath the high ceiling.
"You came,"
Luke says, as though he had not expected me to go through with it. He puts his arms around me, and I deeply inhale his scent, a mix of pine and soap, burying my nose against his neck. Though it is only the second time he held me, his embrace feels like home. His lips near mine, and I close my eyes with anticipation. But Theo squirms between us and I pull back. "Is this safe?" I ask, as he leads me into a small anteroom to one side. There he lights a candle, which flickers, illuminating our long shadows on the wall. There is a scratching sound as something scurries from the corner, seeking darkness.
"No one comes here," Luke says. "It used to be the pride of the town. Not so much to be proud of anymore."
He looks down.
"Is this your brother?"
he asks, and I nod. There was no one to mind him. I hear the apology in my voice. I search Luke's face for a sign of annoyance, but there is none.
"Is he better now?"
Luke asks with genuine concern. "He's fine, but it was a high fever. Terribly scary. That's why I couldn't meet you last Sunday," I add. Luke nods solemnly.
"I would have tried you sooner, but I knew it would be impossible until he was well."
He reaches into his coat.
"Here, I brought this."
In his smooth, open palm lies a cube of sugar. Real sugar. I fight the urge to grab it and shove it in my mouth. Instead, I touch it to my tongue, shivering at the taste I'd almost forgotten. Then I lower it to Theo's lips. He gurgles and smiles at the unfamiliar sweetness.
"Thank you," I say.
"I haven't tasted real sugar since..." I falter, remembering how my father had squirreled some away for my birthday nearly a year earlier. "Since before the war," I finish lamely.
"I told Papa that from now on, I would only live off the ration coupons like everyone else," he says. "I don't feel right having more than others."
"Luke, I am not sure what to say." He reaches out his hand to stroke the smoothness of Theo's palm.
"Do you want to hold him?" I ask. "Really? I've never..."
I pass Theo to Luke, and the baby coos, falling naturally into his large arms. Luke lowers himself to the floor slowly, still cradling Theo. Theo's eyes begin to grow heavy, and then close. Luke takes off his jacket and makes a soft bed of it for Theo, setting him down gently. Then he reaches for me, drawing me into his arms.
"You found your way here with no trouble?"
He kisses me, not waiting for an answer. I press closer to him, wanting more. I let his hands wander farther, and for a moment, I am not broken and shamed, nor a circus freak. I am just a girl again. But as his fingers graze my hips, I stop him.
"The baby.
He's falling asleep." I burrow closer in Luke's arms. "We're going," I say sadly.
"I know. I promised to come see you in the next village, remember?"
"Not there," I reply. "We're going back to Germany. Or at least somewhere close to it." His body stiffens, and his frown grows deeper. But that's so dangerous. I know. There isn't a choice. I'll find you there, too, he says earnestly. You could hardly come more than once.
Every week, he counters. More, if you want.
But it's really far, I protest.
So?
He asks. Don't you think I can manage it? It's not that. It's just that... I look down. Why would you want to? I mean, it's so much trouble.
Because I can't stand the thought of not seeing you again, he blurts.
When I lift my head, his cheeks are red, as though the air has suddenly grown warm. There's a look of fondness in his eyes. How can someone who has known me such a short time feel so much affection, when those who had loved me my whole life seemed to have none?
I want to show you something.
He stands and leads me to a small door at the back of the gallery. I look back to where Theo lies, still sleeping. Surely Luke does not mean for me to leave him alone. What is it? I ask, my curiosity growing as Luke opens the closet. He pulls out a painting. The oil so fresh, the smell tickles my nose. It is a picture of an aerialist, I realize, mid-swing on the trapeze. How had he come to have it? I study her form, the familiar arc of her body on the sweep. Her hair is light and worn in a high knot, like mine. Then, taking in the familiar red costume, I gasp. It is a portrait of me. No, not exactly me. A more beautiful version. Body graceful. Features flawless. Luke had painted me as he sees me. The image adoring. Oh, Luke! I say with amazement. I understand now the way he takes me in with an artist's eye, looking intently, studying detail. It's stunning. You have real talent. He has captured me perfectly, from the texture of my costume to the slight look of fear in my eyes that I never quite managed to hide. You think so? His face is doubtful, but a note of pride creeps into his voice. Absolutely marvelous, I reply, meaning it. I try to imagine the hours and care it had taken him. Why did you give up on studying art? His face clouds.
I wanted to be an artist. I used to paint in the loft of our barn, you know. But my father found what I was doing, and he destroyed my work, forbade me from doing more. I begged him to let me become an art teacher at least, but he would hear none of it.
Luke's eyes flicker as he relives the memory. He continues,
I painted in secret until he found out.
Luke held up his right hand with its twisted index finger.
He made sure I could never be a real artist.
I recoil in horror. Not at Luke's disfigurement, but at the cruelty inflicted by a father on his own child.
Not enough to stop me from being useful, just from being good at the really intricate details, he adds.
I take his hand and kiss his finger, my heart weeping. None of us, it seems, not even Luke, is free from darkness and pain.
How can you stay with him? I demand. He's a monster!
Luke's eyes widen, and I wonder if he will be angry with me.
He was doing what he thought was right, he replies.
We sit silently, neither speaking. Luke has trusted me with his awful secret. I should tell him, right now, about my own past. But then I hear Astrid's voice. Never assume that you know the mind of another. Looking into Luke's clear blue eyes, I know he will not understand the choices I have made, and the experiences that have brought me to make them. Instead, I reach for him, cupping his face in my palms and turning it to me. I kiss him over and over again, not stopping, heedless of where we are and the fact that Theo is just feet away. Luke's arms are around me, hands on my waist and hips. For a second, I want to pull away. My stomach has never quite returned to what it was before childbirth. My breasts droop slightly from the milk I had carried. But then I wrap my arms around him and let myself be swept away. Luke's hands reach under my skirt. I start to protest. We cannot possibly do this here. He lays me back gently, placing one hand under my head to protect it from the hardness of the stone floor. The German soldier, the only other man I have been with in this way, appears in my mind. I tense. Luke cups my chin in his hand then, gently bringing my gaze to his.
"I love you, Noah," he says.
"I love you too." The words come out in a breathless rush. My passion grows, pushing the memories away. When it is over, we lie in a heap of half-strewn clothes on the hard stone floor, our legs tangled together.
"That was wonderful," I declare, too loudly.
My voice echoes through the rafters of the museum, sending an unseen pigeon fluttering. We both laugh softly. He gathers me up in his arms, drawing me closer.
"I'm so glad we shared our first time together," he says,
presuming that I am as innocent as he.
"I'm sorry," he says a minute later,
taking my silence for regret.
"I shouldn't have taken advantage of the situation."
"You didn't," I reassure him. "I wanted it too.
If we had a settled future together," he frets.
"Or even a bed," I joke. But his face remains somber.
"Things should be different. This damn war," he swears.
"If not for this damn war, I think, we never would have met."
"I'm sorry," he says again.
I embrace him tightly. "Don't be." "I'm not." Theo wakes then, his cry cutting through the stillness. I pull away to button my blouse. Luke stands and helps me up. I smooth my skirt as we go to Theo. Luke picks him up, more confident this time. He gazes at Theo fondly. We sink to the ground once more, and the three of us huddle together in the darkness, a kind of makeshift family, listening to the sounds of the night museum, the scratching of mice and blowing of the wind outside.
"Come with me," Luke says. "Away from here. I'll get a car and drive us to the border."
Us. Though Luke had spoken before about going away together, the suggestion seems more serious now, the possibility real. I try to imagine it, leaving the circus and starting a life with Luke. The idea is as terrifying as it is magnificent.
"I can't," I say, wanting desperately to run away with him, but knowing the risks and the reality. "Where would we go? And what about Astrid, and the circus, and a thousand other things I cannot explain to him?"
"Is it about Theo? We could take him with us, raise him as ours. He would never know differently."
Luke's voice is hopeful, and I am touched that he wants to take responsibility for Theo. I shake my head firmly. "There's so much more to it than that. Astrid and the circus. I owe them my life."
"Surely she would understand. She would want you to go."
He tries again.
"Noah, I want to take you and Theo away from here, to a place where you would be safe.
He wants to take care of me. How I wish I was the girl I used to be. She might have let him. But I've come too far. I don't know how to do that anymore. But I raise my finger to his lips. Let's not talk about it anymore. Theo begins to fuss again, tired and cold and confused by the unfamiliar surroundings.
We have to go, I say reluctantly, not wanting to end this perfect moment, but worried that someone might hear the noise and find us.
Luke stands and passes Theo to me, tucking the jacket a bit closer around him. It is late when we start back, well after curfew. The village is dark, and the woods are still. Luke follows me silently as we near the fairgrounds. The music has stopped, and I wonder if I have been gone so long that it has ended, and everyone is asleep. But the torches still burn in the grove. In their glow, I see Estrid, standing on the edge of the clearing. I can tell from the way that she is standing, arms crossed, that she is angry. Dread tightens my stomach to a knot. Estrid knows that I went, I think. That I broke my promise to her not to see Luke again. Estrid! I start forward around the corner of the train. Let me explain! Then, I freeze. The circus folk are still gathered in the grove where the wedding celebration had taken place. They no longer dance, though, but stand motionless, like figures in a tableau. Taking another step forward, I understand why. In the center of the grove, where the wedding ceremony had taken place just hours earlier, are a half dozen gendarmes. And their guns are pointed at Peter.
Chapter 18. Estrid. I stand frozen as the police move toward Peter, guns raised. Surely this cannot be real. A prank someone is playing on our wedding night. But no one is laughing. The faces around me are twisted with shock and terror. A minute and an eternity earlier, Peter was gazing down at me, face aglow, contemplating our future together. Then a shadow passed over his eyes, and the reflection of French police filled the space behind the other circus performers. The police had come in great numbers, foreclosing any chance of resistance or escape. Their faces are familiar from the village. Once, they might have tipped their hats in greeting, or at least nodded on the street. Now they stand before him, wearing ominous expressions. Jack-booted feet spread wide.
Peter Moskowitz,
one of the policemen, presumably the captain, says in a low, terse voice. He looks a bit older than the others, with a graying mustache and pins adorning the front of his uniform.
You are under arrest.
I open my mouth to protest, but no sound comes out. It is the nightmare I have had a dozen times, now come true. Peter lifts his head slowly at the policeman's summons. Fury burns in his eyes. He sits motionless, but I can see his mind working, calculating what to do. The police eye him warily, but keep their distance, as though facing a strange or dangerous animal. I hold my breath. Part of me wants Peter to fight and resist, even at this most futile of moments. But that will only make things worse. What do they want with Peter, I wonder? Why not me? Herr Neuhoff steps forward.
Gentlemen, s'il vous plaît, what is the issue?
He mops his brow with a stained handkerchief.
I'm sure if we talk it over, some of my best Bordeaux, perhaps?
He smiles invitingly. More than once he has dissuaded the police from searching the tents with good food and drink he kept for just such a purpose. But the police ignore him, drawing in closer to Peter.
"What is the charge?"
Herr Neuhoff demands, discarding his cordial tone and summoning authority to his voice.
"Treason," the captain replies. "Against France and the Reich."
Herr Neuhoff's eyes shoot uneasily in my direction. He had warned Peter so many times about his act, and now he will pay the price. But they haven't taken him yet.
"Struggle, fight, run," I urge him silently.
I look desperately across the field in the direction of the hiding place Peter had so lovingly created for me in his cabin. He'd meant for the small space to hold me, not him. Even if he could fit, though, it is too far away and too late. There is no hiding anymore.
"Let's go," the captain says, but there is no anger in his voice. He is a gray-haired man, probably a year or two from retirement. He thinks he is just doing his job. Beside him, though, a younger officer taps a club against his leg angrily, just wanting the chance to use it. Peter's eyes travel to the club at the same time as mine. At last, he unfolds himself and stands. He will not make a scene and risk the consequences for me or the others. He walks toward the police slowly, but without protest, his limbs stiff with rage. Through my horror, I feel a tiny flicker of hope. Perhaps this will prove to be not so much worse than the inspections. Herr Neuhoff can bribe the police and have him home by morning. Peter nears the police. A sound escapes my throat as one of the policemen puts Peter's hands in cuffs, whitening his wrists as they cut into the skin and causing my own arms to ache. No one seems to hear. Peter stands calmly, offering no resistance. But then, the officer with the club reaches up and knocks the top hat off Peter's head. Surprise and rage seem to break Peter's face into a thousand pieces. He lunges for the hat. Thrown off balance by the cuffs on his wrists, he falls sideways to the ground. The policeman drags Peter to his feet. His wedding suit is soiled with dirt now, and his limbs shake with anger. I know that he will not be held back now.
"You won't have any use for that where you're going," the policeman sneers, kicking the hat.
The air hangs silent as Peter seems to be thinking of a retort. Then he spits in the policeman's face. There is a beat of silence as the policeman stands stunned. Then he lurches forward with a roar, kneeing Peter hard in the groin.
"No!"
I cry, as Peter doubles over in a heap. Though he does not get up, the man kicks him over and over again. "Say something," I think. "Do something." But I am frozen, paralyzed by horror. The man is using his club now, raining blows on Peter's head and back. My body screams out with pain, feeling each hit as though I had been struck. Peter lies motionless in a ball.
"Enough,"
the captain says sharply, pulling the younger policeman away.
"They want him alive."
Hearing this last part, I am terrified. Who wants him, and for what?
"Get him in the truck," the captain orders.
Two of the police haul Peter to his feet and start for the truck. He offers no resistance now.
"I will never leave you," he said just days earlier. He seems aged years, a beaten man. "But I will not give up."
"Wait!"
I cry, starting toward him. A policeman grabs the shoulder of my dress as I near, sharp nails cutting into my skin. I push him away, heedless as the fabric tears. I reach for Peter's arm, but he shrugs me off.
"Astrid,
You can't come with me, he says in German, his voice low and terse.
A large bump is beginning to form on his forehead where he was struck.
You need to stay here. You need to be safe.
They'll take you to the village jail. You'll be back in a few hours, I say, desperately wanting to believe it. They're just trying to scare us. Send a warning. Soon you will be back.
There's no coming back, he says before I can finish. And you can't wait for me here. You must continue on with the show. Do you understand?
His dark eyes seem to burn into me.
Promise me, he says.
But I cannot.
Enough,
the policeman who had struck Peter snarls, tearing us apart. I start to lunge at him, wanting to claw his eyes out.
Give me a reason, he threatens.
I pull back. I cannot make things worse for Peter. The police begin dragging Peter from the backyard toward an army box truck that has pulled up on the dirt road close to the edge of the big top. There is writing on the side, in a Slavic language I do not recognize. A black police car sits in front of it. A driver emerges from the truck in a military uniform and opens the rear doors, revealing two long rows of benches inside. I understand, then, that it is all ending. He isn't coming back.
No!
I cry, rushing toward the truck. Arms grab me from behind, restrain me. It is Noah, though where she has come from I do not know. She wraps both arms around me.
Think of yourself and your baby.
She is right. Still, I fight against her with all the force of my body, a lion trying to break free from its handler.
They're taking him, Noah,
I say desperately.
We have to stop this. This isn't the way to do it, she replies, her voice firm and low. You can't help him if you get arrested, too.
She is right, of course.
But how can I stand here and do nothing while they take my whole world away? Do something, I plead, begging Noah to help me as I have helped her. But she simply holds on to me, as powerless as I am.
Herr Neuhoff rushes forward once more, face red with anger and desperation. He holds out a small bag in his hand, heavy with coins. Likely, much of the remaining money the circus has. Giving it would leave us in ruin, but he would do it to save Peter's life.
Officers, wait, he begs. Please, God, I pray, let it work. It is our last hope.
The captain turns away, and I see in his eyes a flash of remorse, which scares me more than anything has.
I'm sorry, he says. This is out of my control.
My panic redoubles, and I break free from Noah's grasp, racing forward.
Peter!
But it is too late. The police are loading him into the back of the truck, and he does not resist. I lunge for the door, my fingers just inches from Peter, nearly grazing him, but missing. I turn to the closest policeman.
Take me instead, I say.
Astrid, no!
I hear Noah call from behind me.
Take me,
I repeat, ignoring her.
I'm his wife and a Jew,
I cry, heedless of the danger I am bringing, not just to myself, but the entire circus. The policeman looks uncertainly toward the captain for guidance.
Wait here,
the captain orders. He disappears around the front of the truck to the police car, and returns with some papers.
We have no record of a Jew with the circus, and you aren't listed for transport.
He turns to Peter.
Is it true that she is your wife?
I have no wife.
Peter's eyes are like stone. I step backward,
ripped to the core by his denial.
"Stand back,"
the guard orders, closing the door and separating me and Peter for good.
"No,"
I cry. I reach for the truck once more. The police pry my fingers from the bumper, flinging me backward so hard I almost stumble. But I run around the truck and stand in front of it, arms folded. They will have to run me over to leave.
"Astrid, stop!"
I hear Noah again call, her voice sounding so very far away. The policeman who had beaten Peter strides toward me.
"Step aside," he barks, raising the club.
"Astrid, no!"
Peter cries with more anguish than I have ever heard, his voice muffled by the glass that now separates us.
"For the love of God, move!"
I do not move. The policeman swings his arm downward. I try to step back, but it is too late. The club hits my stomach with a sickening thud. Pain explodes through my midsection, and I fall sideways to the ground.
"Astrid!"
Noah cries, closer now, as she rushes to me. She throws her body on top of mine, trying to shield me.
"Enough!"
the captain orders, moving to restrain his subordinate. The policeman does not stop. He swings back his foot and kicks me hard across my side, finding the spot Noah has not managed to cover. Something seems to break loose inside me. I scream, my pain reverberating through the trees. Then, hearing a growl, I lift my head. Herr Neuhoff marches toward the police, his face deep red with anger, as he moves to place himself between us and the guard.
"You dare to hit a woman?"
I have never seen him so enraged. He draws himself to his full 5'3", seeming to grow larger and more resplendent as he faces down the German. The police officer raises his truncheon again. Terror surges through me. Herr Neuhoff is an old man. He will never survive such a blow. Herr Neuhoff brings his hands to his chest, and a look of surprise crosses his face. He crumples to the ground, as though he has been struck. But the guard has not hit him, and the truncheon remains in the air. Noah races to Herr Neuhoff. I try to stand to go to him as well. A knife-like pain creases my stomach, and I double over once more. I drag myself across the ground to where he lies as quickly as I can manage. There is cramping low in my stomach now, growing stronger. I feel a dampness inside my skirt, as though I had soiled myself when I was a child. Let it be just the wet ground, I pray. I near Herr Neuhoff, whose face is ashen and covered with sweat.
"There I am,"
he whispers, and whether he thinks I am his long-gone wife, or he is simply remembering her, I cannot say. Noah loosens his collar, and he gasps for air. A memory flashes through my mind then, of playing in the valley between our winter quarters with my brother when I was a child, sledding downhill in an unbroken sea of white. I had looked up and seen Herr Neuhoff standing on the hilltop. Set against an azure sky, he'd reminded me of the Greek god Zeus atop Mount Olympus. Noticing me, he had smiled. Even then, it seemed, he was watching out for us.
"Medic!"
I cry. But no one, not the police or the guards, moves to aid us. Noah crouches by my side, and we watch helplessly as Herr Neuhoff's eyes go blank and still. Below me, my skirt is not just damp, but wet now, the moisture too warm to be from the ground. Blood. Am I to lose my child, too? The baby, which days ago I was not sure I wanted, is suddenly everything I have in this world. I hold my stomach, clutching it to keep the life inside me from slipping away. Then
I start to pray, in a way I have not done since I was a small girl.
The truck engine revs. I raise up with my hands as it starts forward, belching exhaust down upon us. There is a banging noise, Peter pounding on the glass window, seeing what has happened, but powerless to help. I reach out, as if to touch him. Sharp pain, worse than when the soldier struck me, shoots through my lower stomach. I drop and curl into a ball once more, hugging my knees to my chest. Still lying on the ground, I turn my head to look at Peter one last time. Through the window, I see him sobbing openly now. His sorrow cuts through me, more painful than any blow. The eyes that just minutes ago gazed so lovingly at me grow smaller. The lips I kissed in our sacred vow farther away.
The truck roars, and Peter disappears from sight.
Chapter 19. Noah. Astrid! I cry, racing toward her as the rumble of the engine fades in the distance. She does not answer, but lies motionless on the ground, one arm outstretched in the direction the truck has gone. As I near, she curls into a ball.
No! No!
Astrid calls out beside me, over and over, clutching her belly and weeping. I sit down beside her and half lift her onto my lap, cradling her like a child. Then I turn back toward Herr Neuhoff. There is no sign of a blow. His skin is a deathly shade like ash, though, eyes cast toward the sky. I remember then his cough, his heart condition. Astrid lifts her head, her eyes widening in horror as she takes in Herr Neuhoff's still body.
"We need a doctor,"
she says frantically, trying to sit. Then, with a moan, she doubles over once more. I put my arm around her, unsure whether she really believes we can still help him, or just in denial.
"He's gone, Astrid."
I hold her tighter as she sobs. Then, with my free hand, I close Herr Neuhoff's eyes and wipe a bit of mud from his cheek. His face is peaceful, as if he is sleeping soundly. Astrid lies pale and weak in my arms. Her hands are clutched tightly against her stomach. "The baby," I think with panic, but I do not dare say that aloud. A crowd of performers and workers linger a good distance away, watching us. I gesture to one of the men, waving him over.
"We need to return Herr Neuhoff to his carriage," I instruct, forcing some authority into my voice in hopes that he will listen.
"Then contact the undertaker." Astrid turns away, not wanting to hear the details.
"Astrid, come, let us help you."
I stand and try to raise her up, but she lies on the ground beside Herr Neuhoff, refusing to move, like a dog that has lost its master.
"You aren't doing Peter any good," I add.
"Peter is gone," she says, each word heavy with grief. A hand touches my shoulder. I look up to see Luke, holding Theo. When we had reached the fairgrounds and seen the police, I had thrust Theo at Luke and raced to help Astrid. Thankfully, he had the good sense to keep Theo out of sight. Luke starts to kneel behind Astrid, as if to help me lift her. But I wave him off. Astrid seeing him will only make things worse.
"Come, Astrid," I plead, straining again to help her to her feet.
I start forward with effort, nearly buckling under her weight. Luke follows at a distance, carrying Theo.
"Why?"
I cannot help but ask as we limp toward the train.
"Why would they arrest Peter?"
When I had first seen the police, I wondered if they had learned of the wedding, which violated the laws of Vichy and the Reich. But if that had been the case, they would have taken Astrid as well.
"The act," she replies flatly.
Part of me had already known the answer. They wanted Peter because of the way in which he mocked the Germans in the show. We reach the train, and I help Astrid into the sleeper car. Though it is late, the carriage is empty, the others still clustered outside talking about everything that had happened. I help Astrid to her berth. "You should rest," I say, as I take off her shoes. She does not reply, but sits stiffly, staring straight ahead. Though I have seen her here dozens of times, she looks strangely out of place. She should be with Peter, celebrating their wedding night. Now that dream is gone. It hardly seems possible. I reach back through the door of the train to take Theo from Luke. Then I try to hand Theo to Astrid. Usually he is such a comfort to her, but now she waves him away. "Astrid, we'll have to make arrangements for Herr Neuhoff," I begin. "We'll have to cancel tonight's show, of course, but by tomorrow we should perform again. Don't you agree?" I hear a note of pleading in my voice, wanting her to take charge as she always has. She sits motionless, though, her will gone. Tears well up in my eyes and spill over. I want so much to be strong for her, but I cannot help it. "Oh, Astrid, I just can't believe that Herr Neuhoff is gone." Even though I had known him for only a few months, he was in so many ways more a father than my own had been.
"He isn't the only one," she replies sharply.
"Yes, of course," I reply hastily, wiping my eyes. I have no right to cry in front of her, when she has lost so much more. "We mustn't give up on Peter, though. He'll be back." She does not reply. Suddenly her face blanches. She lies down, clutching her stomach. Then she turns away to face the wall and lets out a moan. This is not just grief, I realize, but pain. I see it then, a small pool of blood under her, seeping through her skirt onto the sheet.
"Oh, Astrid, your baby," I cry, blurting out her secret in my panic.
The stain grows larger even as I watch.
"I'll go into town and find a doctor."
She shakes her head with resignation.
"There's nothing to be done," she replies. "It's too late."
"Someone should check you," I protest. "Let me fetch Berta at least."
"I just want to rest."
How long has she known this was happening?
"I'm so sorry."
I search for the right words. "I know what it feels like to lose a child." But my child survived to be born. Whether this makes it better or worse, I do not know.
"It's for the best, really," she says darkly. "I never would have been any good at being a mother."
"That isn't true," I protest. "I've seen you with Theo, and I know that isn't true."
"You must admit, I'm hardly the mothering type."
Her eyes do not meet mine. "There are all different kinds of mothers," I say, trying to help, but feeling at the same time as though I am just making things worse.
"Without a baby, I'm free to perform or do anything else I'd like," she says,
as if trying to convince herself. She rolls toward me.
"Nothing is going to change what has happened."
Then she looks past me, and her eyes widen. I turn to see Luke, who stands uneasily in the doorway to the carriage, not daring to enter, but not wanting to leave me either after all that had happened.
"What is he doing here?"
Astrid demands.
"Astrid!"
I struggle to find an explanation as to why I am with Luke, after I had sworn to her I would stop seeing him. But I find none.
Convenient how he took you away from here just before the arrest.
She spits in French, wanting Luke to hear.
He must have known.
No, I cry. Luke would never betray us. I wait for Luke to say something to deny Astrid's accusation and defend himself, but he does not. Astrid's distrust seeps through me. Luke had seen Peter's act, and even warned Peter it would lead to trouble. I recall Luke's words to Peter the night he had come to the circus. They'll arrest you. Was that a prediction, or had he known what was to come?
This is all his fault!
Astrid flares, hurling all of her anger and sorrow at Luke. I want to tell her that Peter, not Luke, is to blame for doing the routine after Herr Neuhoff had forbidden it. But now is not the time. It would only make things worse. Luke raises his hands in surrender, unwilling to quarrel. He steps off the train and into the shadows. I sit down beside Astrid and wrap my arms around her. Even if Luke is innocent, it is because I was off with him that I had not been here when Astrid needed me. She shudders violently. Then she closes her eyes. So still, I check to make sure she is still breathing. Her losses slam down upon me then. Herr Neuhoff, her child and Peter, all taken from her in a single night. Or perhaps not. I look toward the door of the rail car. Hold him, I tell Astrid, pressing Theo firmly into her arms. I walk to the door of the rail car and step down, but don't see Luke. Maybe he has gone. A moment later, he steps from the shadows.
Is she all right?
He asks. I don't know, I say, fighting back tears. She's lost everything.
I'm so sorry, Luke says. I feel as if this is all my fault.
What do you mean? A rock of dread forms in the pit of my stomach. Had Astrid been right about him after all?
My father was complaining about the circus a week or so ago.
Luke begins slowly.
He said the show coming here would only cause trouble. I told him how I had warned Peter about the routine, told him not to do it again. I thought it would help. But that only seemed to make him angrier.
Peter chose to do the act, I reply. That wasn't your fault.
Luke shakes his head. There's more. Papa warned me to stay away from you, or there would be consequences. I thought I'd been careful going back and forth. But if he had one of his men watching me, and he followed me here tonight and saw the wedding... I'm so sorry, he says again, grabbing my hand.
His face watches mine, eyes pleading. You didn't mean to do anything, I say. But I pull away. Even though he hadn't meant to, Luke had brought ruin to the circus, just as Astrid had warned. I am suddenly angry, not just at Luke, but at myself.
If you want me to go now, I understand,
Luke says.
You must hate me for what I've done.
No, I reply firmly. I know it wasn't your fault. But we need to fix this.
How?
He asks. We must do something to find Peter. Doubt clouds Luke's eyes. He has seen people taken by the police too many times, and knows how impossible this is. I square my shoulders. I had failed Astrid once before. I cannot let that happen again. Your father, I say. This was a police action.
Surely he knows something about it. Pain crosses Luke's face at the notion that his father was somehow involved.
I will talk to him first thing in the morning, and see if he knows anything.
Morning could be too late, I reply. We have to go see him now.
We?
Luke repeats with disbelief.
I'm coming with you, I say firmly.
He puts a hand on my shoulder.
Noah, you can't.
You don't want your father to see you with me, I say, stung.
It's not that. But everything is so dangerous right now. Why can't you just wait here?
Because I have to do this for Astrid. I'm going to see your father now, with or without you. I look him squarely in the eyes. With would be better. He opens his mouth to argue further.
Fine, he says,
seeming to think better of it. Just give me a minute. I look down the outside of the train, where a few of the circus women stand huddled, talking.
Elsie,
I call, gesturing her over. The girl breaks free from the group and comes to me. I need you to watch Theo for a bit. Though I still don't like or trust her after what she had done with Theo, I have no choice. Astrid is in no shape to watch him alone.
Astrid.
I look back through the doorway of the carriage at Astrid, who lies doubled over on the berth, clutching Theo. I should stay and comfort her, but I need to know what Luke learns from his father.
Watch Astrid, too, I instruct Elsie. Both of them. I'll be back as soon as I can.
I should tell Astrid myself that I am going, but I don't want her to ask questions.
I'm ready now, I tell Luke, putting my hand in his as he starts in the direction of the trees.
Luke leads me through the forest down a path where I have not been before. A chilling breeze, colder than I have felt in weeks, causes the trees to dance wildly above us, casting ghostly shadows on the moonlit ground. Several minutes later, the woods break to a sloping pasture that ends at a villa. I am not sure what I expected the mayor's residence to look like. Something more grand, or ominous, or at least a bit larger. But it is a traditional French country house, a long sloping gray slate roof broken by three windows. There is a flagstone path ending at a rounded door, ivy climbing the wall on each side. A bicycle leans against the adjacent fence. It is the middle of the night, and I'd expected the house to be quiet. But behind the curtain, the lights are still on. I stop in my tracks, suddenly losing my nerve.
Maybe this was a mistake.
That's what I was trying to tell you before. If Papa sees you...
Luke starts to push me into the low shrubs beside the fence. The bicycle that is leaning there tumbles to the hard ground with a clatter. Before I can hide, the front door opens, and a man appears in a smoking jacket.
Luke?
He calls, peering into the darkness. He is an older version of his son, wizened and stooped, but with the same blue eyes and chiseled features. He might have been handsome in his day.
Is that you?
In his voice I hear concern. A father, for all his faults, still worried about his son. Hardly the villain I had imagined. A rich, garlicky smell comes from inside the house. Coq au vin for dinner early, perhaps, mixed with cigar smoke. The mayor steps outside, squinting in the darkness. As his eyes adjust, they lock on me. I stiffen.
You're the circus girl,
the mayor says, a note of disdain in his voice.
What do you want?
Luke clears his throat.
One of their performers has been arrested, he says.
The mayor stiffens, and for a moment I think he will deny it. But then he nods.
The Russian clown.
Peter is so much more than that,
I want to protest. Astrid's husband, the heart of the circus. Surely you can do something. Luke's voice is pleading.